What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to episode number 14 of the Crafted Podcast, a podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, metalworking, leather, electronics, and more. We come out with new episodes every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. And we also stream every Thursday night live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you want to catch us live, the easiest way to do that is probably through our new app, the Crafted Podcast app, which can be found on the iOS and Google Play marketplace. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, James Wright from Wood by Wright. What's going on, James?
A lot of things are going on. Would you like to join me?
And Zach Herbert-Holz from ZH Fabrication. What's going on, Zach?
Not much, man.
Another classic intro. So also, in case you missed it, we have started a Patreon. So we have got two patrons over there now, which is awesome. Bring us up to the sweet total of $4 a month. So we can split a beer when we get together and share it among the three of us. So that'll be cool. we've got some great support levels over there. We're going to start doing a weekly after show, some monthly hangouts, all that kind of stuff. So that should be a lot of fun. So if you guys want to support the show, if you enjoy listening, definitely go check that out. So I guess let's go ahead and kick off what we've been working on. I guess, Zach, you want to start us off?
Sure. Where's my list? That's how bad my memory is. Well, I've been cranking out the blacksmith roses because I've had a few sales of those, so I expect I'm probably going to get quite a few when everybody forgets to, you know, buy their significant other or something for Valentine's Day. So, been making those, and I finally just was dropped off the material to start these sliding barn doors. They're interior, but it's actually like an old prison fence. I think it's like really old weathered cypress, so it should be an interesting build. I've never done one of those before, and they're all over the place on like Pinterest and Etsy and all those really fun corners of the internet that I love so much. But it should be a really fun build. It's going to be kind of cool, industrial vibe.
Yeah, I saw the wood for that. So are you going to leave it pretty much like the weathered look on it, or are you going to like mill it down at all, or what's your plan?
Yeah, I'm going to leave it weathered. It'd be really weird to like take this, you know, these boards that are the screws were so bad. I was like, because they actually, when they took the fence down, they must have just like taken a sawzall. Yeah, and just like buzzed down the fence, because the my vocabulary is just it's gone tonight. I don't know what's going on. But the bars that keep it all together, I was taking the screws out, and they're like rusted in half, like all the threads are gone. So half the screws, like, I just take out, just the head would like pop off, and so it was fun getting all those out. But it'd be ridiculous to take those boards that have been weathering for God knows how long and then plane them down and make them look like they're fresh out of Home Depot. True. So yeah, it should be cool. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, and you said what kind of wood is it? Cypress? Is that right?
I think it's cypress.
Nice. I've never worked with cypress.
I've never worked with it. It kind of looks like pine. That's a little bit more golden and usually kind of has more swirly grain. And for some reason, maybe it's just a lot of it grows down here in Florida, but they want like more money for that than, and it's not even nice. I mean, cypress in itself isn't really a highly revered wood. It's not bad, but it's kind of like pine.
Well, it's pretty weather resistant, right? I think that's
That's the perk, but it's pretty spendy too for what it is. So getting ready to hopefully rebuild the carburetor on my truck. So yeah.
So when you come to Atlanta, are you gonna have that truck with you or no? I'm not gonna be ready.
No, that thing's. I keep that. The drives in that to like a 1 mile radius of my house.
50-50 chance you'll have to tow it back.
Seriously.
Yeah, I'll get around to it eventually. Hopefully I'll drop a really nasty engine in there and transmission and.
Nice.
So we'll see. Time will tell.
Cool. James, how about you? What you been working on?
I actually just finished the leg vise on my bench, and it is, I have to say, one of the most beautiful things I've ever made. Nice. It is absolutely, yeah. But it's a 2.5-inch cherry chop.
Whoa.
The whole length of the leg. It's 14 inches wide at the top, and it's got carving and bow ties and a brass keeper and a 2.5-inch all wooden screw made out of solid maple. It's pretty
nice. That's awesome.
That's been the big thing. That was one of those projects where, like, yeah, I'll just whip that out, and then I actually had to think through all the things that have to be put together and made for it.
Where'd you get the wood screw for or from?
I actually got it from Acer Ferris. It's a he makes these wood screws actually on an old lathe, but he puts a router as opposed to a lathe cutting knife on it to actually cut the threads, and they're absolutely gorgeous.
So you probably get more like the actual square, like Acme profile threads on there.
No, they're a 60-degree pitch. But for wood, that's you actually want the pitch as opposed to an Acme.
So it's kind of similar to the like Lake Erie stuff.
I don't know.
Oh, you, okay. Yeah, I figured you would know about them. Lake Erie Toolworks. They're I guess probably the big competitor to Benchcrafted for like commercially available like Rubo style vice hardware stuff. Beautiful stuff. I have their Moxon vice and also have their hardware kits for when I get around to actually building my Rubo. Hard maple, really nicely, basically machined wood. That's just gorgeous. Those wood screws, man, when they're made well, is just amazing.
Yeah, I have seen their kits before. I couldn't remember the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know somebody actually sells some sort of setup to where you can make your own.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've done that before, James, right? You've threaded. I saw that on some of your other vice builds.
Yeah, you can get a threading box that will actually cut it in one pass.
Yeah.
Or on something large like a 2-inch, you can actually just cut it with a hacksaw chisel.
I wonder if they make...
It's actually pretty easy.
Do they make a jig to where you could like cut those on your table saw, like with a dado stack?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them.
That would be cool.
Yeah. You know,
okay, you run it at an angle across the blade.
Yeah.
And there'll be a following pin that actually will feed it at its particular speed, and so you just roll the screw through it.
I feel like I've seen like Izzy Swan or somebody make something like that. Oh,
it's more common to do it on a router table than a table saw, but it can be.
Cool. Nice. Well, I've been working on this river table, so I don't know if you guys are familiar. They're probably most popular, or I guess created by this guy, Greg Klassen. Really, really cool. You basically take a live edge slab, cut it down the center, and then turn one half around, and so all of the bark is, or turn both halves around, so all the bark is facing the inside, and then you add a pane of glass that's kind of cut to match the curvature of the live edge, and it gives it that kind of topographical river look, especially if you use blue glass. So that is turning out to be like the difficult part of this project, is finding blue glass. So
how does that work? I mean, I've seen those, they're really cool. Do you like route a little like
recess. Like
a recess in there for the glass to sit in?
Yeah.
And then do you take it to the glass people and they cut it to fit?
So there's a few ways to do it. I'm going to try to cut the glass myself. It actually, according to what I've read, is not that difficult. So you use annealed glass, not tempered glass, because tempered is like impossible to cut. So I'll be using 1/4-inch thick annealed glass. I'm probably going to end up using clear glass just because it seems like this blue glass is just becoming difficult to find.
LEDs in it.
Yeah. It's funny because I know exactly the glass brand and the color name that I need. It's like by PPG. The color is called Azuria, and that's exactly what Greg uses. I mean, I don't know that I want to directly rip off his product, so maybe it's better to use clear or something else. But it's very hard to find this stuff. So, like, there's a local commercial glass company that, you know, they do all kinds of commercial and residential glass stuff, and it's all their colored stuff is like super special order and expensive and all this stuff. So I think I'm just going to go probably with clear. But what you do is, so I went ahead, I've got this slab cut in half, turned around, milled down, so it's all square and, you know, planed, and it looks amazing, this cherry slab. I had no idea the figure that was hiding beneath the roughness of this slab. I've actually never done a project with cherry before, so it's pretty cool, and man, it just looks so freaking amazing, especially for like a $50 slab. I mean it was heavily cupped and heavily twisted, so that's why it was so cheap, but it didn't really matter since I was cutting it in half anyway. So basically what you do is you trace, you know, you can trace your lines onto the wood, but then you can actually just put the piece of glass on top of the wood, trace your line, then you cut the glass, and you can use the off cut essentially as your router template.
Oh, gotcha.
So just clamp it down on your piece of wood, use a template bit, and you're good to go. So that's what I'm going to do, because it's a lot harder to get the glass to match the wood than to get the wood to match the glass.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. I have liked the way those things looked for a long time and have really wanted to build one. So it should be a fun project. I'm going to fill some of the, it, like the cherry slab has some really cool, like, I don't know if they're carpenter bees or you know, those kind of tunnels that you get sometimes in wood. They look really, really neat. So I'm probably going to fill those with either a black epoxy, or I've also got like a metallic tint that I could add to the epoxy. So kind of do some test pieces and see how that looks against the cherry. But it should be a pretty fun one, and really not that intensive. I mean, you really don't need crazy tools for this thing, especially like you could flatten the slab with a router and then really a circular saw, and you're basically good to go. So it's not a tool intensive build, as long as you don't start with an insanely cupped and twisted slab. So yeah, and then just trying to button up this organ cabinet video. Not 100% sure if that's going to be out by the time the you guys listen to this on our feed or hearing it. It might be delayed by another week, but we'll see. I think I'm going to experiment with the long format stuff. I know we were kind of talking about this on our Facebook group. So I know, James, you've experimented with the long format stuff. How have you liked that? Is that, you've only done that one video, right? The squaring up the lumber?
That was the first time we went over 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I've done a couple that are like 18 to 20 minutes. And I love them. It's as long as you can keep up the information and keep the audience interacted and there aren't large dead spaces, they're fantastic.
Yeah, I think my big concern, so I didn't get any footage of me actually talking to the camera. You know, it's just me working, so it would be mostly voiceover. So I don't know if I want to kind of do what Mark from the Wood Whisperer does and like interject some, like I'm using the Domino a lot, so maybe like a little quick, you know, 1 minute quick overview of how the Domino works and, you know, how to lay out the lines and that kind of stuff, just to kind of break up, because 30 minutes straight of voiceover I think could get a little monotonous. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm just
that's
trying
what
to,
I do.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, but like you're squaring lumber. Yeah, I guess you're right. For some reason, I thought you were talking to the camera, but you weren't, were you? That was just voiceover.
Well, no, the squaring lumber, I was talking as I was working.
Yeah.
But most all of my videos are voiceover.
Same. I almost never talk to the camera except for the intro and outro. But I do feel like for the long format stuff, talking to the camera, it does add some sort of level of interest. Like, I feel like that was one of the big reasons that video of yours worked so well, is, you know, you're just kind of, it's almost like it's live, you know, like you're just kind of walking people through. I don't know.
I want to film, like, I need to get together, like go visit William Walker, because my cinematography skills just aren't good. I'm not like, it's just not my my forte, but I want to do like a build that is 100% like Rocky style montage build. Like, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
That would be fun.
It's like cut scenes of me like running up a mountain when the sun's setting, but I'm in Florida, so there's no mountains. I'd have to get creative.
Yeah, just go to the overpass. That's like that when I was biking, like road biking in Florida, that was like the hardest climb was going over the overpass.
Like, coming up
over
driveway.
The highway. Yeah. It's like, man, this is not much vertical gain. Oh, that's funny. Well, I guess let's go ahead and move into our show topic because I think this is going to be a kind of a lengthy one. So we're going to go over joinery 101. We're going to kind of talk about the different types of joinery and, you know, what their applications might be and all that kind of stuff. I think joinery is probably one of the more intimidating topics when you're getting into woodworking because there's so many weird names and, you know, how do you make these different joints and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously, like, wood movement is a big factor with a lot of these joints and, you know, is a big reason why you would use a lot of these joints. So, I think this should be an interesting one. So James, you've got a pretty good overview written down here. You want to kind of kick us off?
Sure. In my mind, this most all joints break down into six different categories, and if you kind of understand the way wood works, the way it splits, and the way it is held together the strongest, you can kind of pick which joint works best by how the wood will affect that joint. But the six joints I kind of split things up into. Number one, a butt joint. That is any joint that doesn't have any mechanical connection. You're just slapping two pieces together. So whether it's a miter or a traditional butt, if you just two edges touch, then it's a butt joint. Then there's a half lap that you remove some material from either one piece or the other so that they kind of nest together. So there's a little bit of mechanical stoppage so they can't move as much. But it's still pretty simple. Then there's the bridle that the two pieces are captured, but they're only captured on three sides. Then the next is the mortise. In that way, they can only move in one plane in and out of the joint. So the mortise and tenon is a fully captured joint. And then finger joints are they're kind of like a bridle joint, except for there's multiples of them. So like dovetails, finger joints, anytime you start getting into some of those weird dovetails, I kind of throw them all in the same category. They do basically the exact same thing. And then last, splined joints. So anytime you put a third piece of wood into the joint to hold it together. So if you're putting like a spline into a miter, or if you're putting like a spline joint along a seam, or even like a domino, because you're putting another piece in there, or any peg joinery, that's kind of like the stopgap. That anytime you put a spline or a peg into something, it's kind of the way to work around any particular movement. Like there's really is no good way of putting these two boards together. Well, then I'll spline it. It's kind of the answer to a lot of problems.
So dowel joinery would also be considered spline then, right? I just kind of thought about that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's a really great summation. I for some reason, and I mean, I guess it makes sense, domino, to me, I'd always thought of in the mortise and tenon category because it really is basically like a loose tenon joint. But, a loose tenon really is kind of a spline joint, I guess. So,
Yeah. Well, same thing with like biscuits. Yeah. With a domino, if you glue it into one side first, then technically it's a mortise because then it's become part of some one piece and then you're putting it into the other side.
Yeah.
But most of the time you glue up both sides at the same time.
Yeah.
Just like a biscuit.
That's cool. Yeah. I think, that's a great overview for sure. I think, as far as starter joints, I think we can kind of all go around and talk about what we think are good intro joints. Obviously, probably butt joints are the ones we all started with. I think that's the most simple, you know, put two pieces of wood together and screw them together, and there you go. I think pocket holes also kind of would fall into that good beginner joinery category. What do you guys think would be next? I guess maybe, like, I guess finger joints to me are pretty beginner friendly. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, a finger joint has a lot of mathematics to it.
Yeah.
Unless you have a specific finger joint jig that you put on your table saw and everything is mechanically measured out, it is actually a difficult joint. By hand, A traditional finger joint is actually far more difficult than dovetails.
Oh, yeah. By hand, that would be, that would be really tough.
I mean, like the...
unless there's only like two fingers. Two well, then really that's a bridal big joint. Fingers.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's fine.
I think for me, I don't like to look at them independently, as in which one would you start with? You know, unless you're just merely practicing for the sake of practicing, which I'd probably say the finger joint would be the next thing to practice. I like to look at them in their particular uses of, you know, how are you joining together? Is it end grain to end grain at 90 degrees? Or
end groin.
Yes, end groin. All depends on what color wood you're using.
I got two comments in like one day yesterday. I can't remember where one was on Insta, the other one, but yeah, they're both pertaining to Keller theory, so that made me happy.
That's funny.
That was good.
In my opinion, when most people are starting working out, the first joint that most people are doing is like a drawer, and so it's the 90 degree end grain, and so that would be the finger joint is usually the first thing to jump off, because you can do that on so many different tools. You can do it on a router, you can do it on a table saw, you can do it by hand. I mean, there's just there's a thousand videos out there on how you can do it.
Yep, and you can make relatively simple jigs. I mean, obviously, if you have a table saw and a router, and kind of knock those out pretty quickly. I first time I'd ever used them was like last week or the week before when I built the organ cabinet, and I don't know why I had waited so long, because man, it's an incredibly strong joint too. The one, I guess the tricky part is the glue up, because you usually have those little fingers kind of protruding, and so you usually gotta, you know, add some sort of spacer blocks so that, you know, you can clamp it properly, and that gets a little bit tricky. But besides that, yeah, it's a great joint.
Now, the easiest way in my mind to make a finger joint, if you put a dado stack, whatever thickness you have, and then you cut two little blocks of wood. So let's say your dado stack is 3/4 inch wide, and you cut two blocks of wood that are 3/4 inch thick. And so you put your fence, your sliding fence up to the blade, put the two blocks of wood right up beside the blade, the second one away from it, attached to your fence.
That's exactly what in the
it'll allow you to easily advance your finger one at a time.
What video did I do? It was the crosscut sled and box joint jig.
Yeah.
So I made like my box. I had my crosscut sled, and then I had the box joint jig that I just made it so that I could screw it onto the back, like the back of the crosscut sled. And that's how I did it because getting that that spacing, you have to be absolutely 100% on. Otherwise, your joints won't line up. Especially the longer you go, they'll just get off and it's messy. But I cut I cut a strip to fit perfectly in the dado slot, and then I cut it in half and used that to actually space off of the cut. So I knew that there was actually no math involved. I didn't have to do any math whatsoever to get the spacing perfectly. I just essentially did a fit for it. It's been a while, but if you watch the video, it should make sense. I did it once before, and then I came up with a better way to do it, and I put that in the video. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I think probably the half lap is also another great kind of relatively beginner one. I know a lot of people do that with, you know, just a circular saw, and you know, make multiple passes, kind of knock away the excess with a chisel, and you know, you're pretty much in business. So that's a really strong glues joint.
Yeah, with modern glues, it's almost just as strong as a bridle or mortise and tenon. It's you're basically making the two woods the same piece, because it is an actual long grain to long grain connection.
Yeah.
So it's just thinking about it. So technically, you can finger a butt joint. That's really all it is, right? But one thing you never want to do is finger a bridle joint. That'll get you in trouble.
There is the innuendo on this episode is just it's hard to avoid for sure.
Don't even get started on pocket holes.
Yeah, sir. Yeah, so
we're on the PG-13 threshold right now. I know,
seriously,
feel it.
Got to keep this family friendly. So I don't think I've ever really done a bridle joint. I guess that's, you know, in the power tool world, a table saw jig is probably best for that, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, you can the mortised side of the bridle joint, you just stand it up vertically and you can run it through the saw, raising the saw up to the thickness of the stock. And then your tenon side of the bridle joint, you can basically do the exact same thing, running it vertically in the saw, so you're taking out the same thickness.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be one I need to try here soon. I think, you know, I've always been a little lazy with my joinery. A lot of times I just want to kind of get it done, and as long as it's strong enough, I'm, you know, okay with it. So I know for me, I reach for pocket holes quite a bit. That's kind of an easy fallback for me. Also now, obviously, that I have the Domino, that has been a huge time saver for me. I've never actually cut a traditional mortise and tenon joint, so that's kind of crazy. Hopefully I will be rectifying that when I take that arts and crafts bookcase class. I'm pretty positive we're going to have to cut plenty of through mortise and tenons, so that'll be a big learning experience for me. So I think, you know, it's tough. I mean, it's like the same with hand-cut dovetails. Like, I would love to incorporate those a little bit more, but I always feel like I'm just trying to move the project along. And, you know, all of those types of joints, they just take a lot longer.
The big thing for me, the difference between, you know, using a domino and a mortise and tenon, you know, in all honesty, in structural capacity, they're identical. They have the same amount of strength. They're really not going to have any mechanical difference between one or the other. I think the only thing for me that really makes me lean towards doing mortise and tenon and dovetails is I like the idea of, if I were to construct this piece and not use any glue, would it still stand up on its own and still be usable?
Yeah.
And so that's the big difference, because if you're just doing, you know, half laps and finger joints, or, you know, pocket holes and domino, it's not something that's going to hold together by itself. It's something that requires the glue.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the,
does that make any difference in the actual piece? No.
That reminds me of a video that I saw. I don't know the terminology for it, but it was a tenon, but they actually cut like a slot for a wedge in the tenon itself, and then as they pound it into the mortise, it drives the wedge into the tenon and expands it so that they can't pull it out.
Yeah, draw bore.
No, it wasn't draw boring. It's
the end of the tenon?
Into the end of the tenon, into the end grain.
Oh, yeah.
And flaring the tenon.
And then they pound the tenon into the mortise, and the bottom of the mortise drives the wedge up into the tenon, and you can't get it out, and you don't need glue.
Yeah. Jay Bates did that on that dining table he built. It was like the wedged tenon on the breadboard ends. He had that. There was some crazy joinery on that build.
That's sprung joint.
Yeah, it was sprung breadboard in. Yeah, that was
just
a
drawboard.
Yeah, that was a wild. It was so funny to me because he went from like plywood projects and like 2x4s, and, you know, pretty much all like construction grade stuff.
Wall.
And now it's like crazy fine woodworking stuff. So it was just like an amazing transition. It's like all of a sudden he was doing just that. Like that dining table was gorgeous. I mean, I think he used hickory on that, and man, that just that wedge through tenon just looked really, really nice. That was pretty slick joint, especially with the sprung breadboard in, so then you don't develop any gaps over time. I mean, that was pretty clever. That was an impressive build for sure.
Yeah, speaking of sprung joints, do you guys know the actual reason for a sprung joint?
I do them or use them.
Well, I'm saying, do you know why, what the original purpose for them was?
I don't know the original purpose. The reason I do it is just so that the ends don't come apart, and also you can use less clamps. I mean, I still use a bunch of clamps, but...
The original reason was so that you can clamp up a panel with one clamp.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Wow.
And it's... Yeah, it's actually, as long as you make the joint on it perfect and you make them nice and flat and your clamp doesn't have a bow in it, you can clamp up, you know, a 4 foot long panel with just one clamp.
That's nice.
I actually just, there's somebody that lives local to me, and I can't remember if he found me through you. I think he found me through YouTube, and he brought over some boards because his table saw broke and he needed me to flatten them because he's doing a tabletop, making a tabletop out of it. And that's what I did for that. It was about 5 feet long, and just did a little spring joint in them and clamped them together in the center just to make sure that they're flat, and turned out really well. So
now, another fun experiment sometime, you can actually join up panels without any clamps. If you put PVA glue in the joint, and if they're perfectly flat and actually jointed together well, you rub it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until it grabs, and it will glue up completely by itself and be just as strong.
Yeah, I've heard of that. So they used to do that with the old hide glue and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah. So we've got a couple of questions from the audience. So I guess from Brad here, just on, still on the topic of joinery, he asks if we recommend learning joinery with hand tools as much as possible, or just to use power tools if you have them. So I think we'll probably have some different opinions on this.
Yeah. James? I would honestly say learn them with whatever tool you have on hand.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because, I mean, it's a completely different skill to do it with any particular tool. Even in hand tools, to do it with a chisel or a saw, it's a completely different skill, and so you're going to have to relearn the joint if you switch to a different tool. So whatever you have on hand, learn how it fits, learn how it feels, learn where to use it, where not to use it. I think those are the more important things than what to make it with.
That was going to be my answer.
I'm good at stealing things.
Stole it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like just because you know how to hand cut dovetails, it's going to be any easier to use a, you know, dovetail jig with a router. You know, like that's,
I have a secret for anybody who's watched any of my videos. I have never cut dovetails before in my life.
I've only cut one set, as you know.
I've built a fair amount of things, and I have yet to do dovetails. I'd like to. I don't even have it. I don't have any saws. I don't have any tenon saws. And I know you could do it with chisels, but mine are...
Actually, a hacksaw is a great dovetail saw.
Huh.
Fine teeth with a light set. It actually works very well.
Huh. Now I guess I don't have any excuses. Thanks, James.
Maybe you'll have to try that when we get together in March.
Probably not. Let's. I'll just weld some stuff.
Yeah, I'll stick with my bare.
We don't have time for that. We don't have time for that.
Should we tell people about the potential get together that might be happening?
Well, if you guys are 100% in, then yeah, let's do it.
I'm there.
I mean, unless something weird happens.
that's super committal right there. I guess it's still a ways off.
Weird things don't happen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so. For any of you guys who don't know, there is a woodworking show in Atlanta, March 31st through April 2nd. And so it looks like we are all going to actually be there. So if you want to come hang out in person with us, definitely come out to that show. I'm sure we'll mention this plenty of times before the show actually happens. But then afterwards, I think Zach and James are going to come back to my place in Asheville, and we are going to do some sort of collaboration project where we're all three kind of working on one piece simultaneously. So I think we're going to probably keep that a secret until that's actually ready to publish. But I think that'll be really, really fun. Very excited about that. And maybe we should even, I mean, I don't know if doing a meetup during one of those things is even has a point to it, because I think everybody's going to be together anyway. But I was going to say we could do some sort of podcast meetup.
I think we should do it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
I think so, because even if it's just the three of us, we can always just go back.
Yeah.
With our tails between our legs.
I think a Crafted Podcast meetup in Atlanta that weekend would be fun. So if any of you guys are interested in that, let us know. Shoot us a message or whatever, and we'll try to figure out the details. I think probably Friday night or Saturday night would probably make the most sense. So considering Sunday, we'll probably be driving up here. So yeah, that could be potentially fun. Cool. So we've got another question from the audience from Evan. He's asked if we have any plans to incorporate upholstery into any upcoming projects. I think, Zach, you said you might have something.
I do. These chairs that I keep talking about that have been like in the design phase for 4 months. He's a really busy guy. He's an architect, and so it's just kind of hung up in the design stage. But it's going to need some upholstery, and I'm not going to do any of it. So it's just these chairs are going to be really nice, and I don't want to learn how to do upholstery on them because I could make those. I could turn them from really nice into abominations very quickly. So, it's going to be an interesting process. It's definitely something I would like to learn how to do. I think it'd be really cool to be able to make my own upholstered, not fully upholstered, but just cushions and that kind of stuff with nice, you know, decent material. So yeah. Definitely something that is on my list of skills to acquire.
Same. I bought actually a book on upholstery probably a month or so ago now, but the problem is I don't really have any of the tooling required for a lot of the more, you know, complicated stuff. Like we don't have a sewing machine here. I don't have any of that stuff. So, for any real in-depth upholstery, obviously that's kind of, you know, the first thing you need. So, I'm definitely interested though, cause like, I know I might be building some arts and crafts style chairs to go with a dining table that somebody already has, in February at some point. So obviously those will need to have an upholstered seat, but it seems like seats for chairs are pretty basic. Like you take a piece of plywood, yeah, add some foam over it and kind of wrap some cloth around it and you're done. You're like, you don't need to even sew, it seems like. So
Bearcat actually just did that in his most recent video.
Oh, okay, cool. I'll have to check
it out. They have like those really cool like pleated buttons and all of that stuff, or like presses. I don't know what the name for that stuff is, but it's pretty cool.
Oh no, that's like this book. I have this vision in my head of doing this leather ottoman with those what are they called? Where, you know, it's like a big cushion with all the buttons inside of it. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. And there's a ton of like math and stuff that you have to do to try to figure out, because obviously every place you have a button, that's going to pull down a certain amount of material. So you have to account for that extra material when trying to design, you know, the whole size.
In both
of,
directions.
Exactly. Yeah. And you got to get all the folds nice and neat. So there is a lot to those kind of things. I think they call it tufted. Is that right? That sounds right.
I think so. That sounds right.
Yeah. So, I browsed through this book and was like immediately intimidated. So, I need to start slow. I think a chair would be really an ideal choice, cause again, no sewing, just some staples and, pretty much good to go. So
didn't we talk about an upholstered table the other day?
Yes.
I mean, the worst table ever.
Poker table, man. Poker tables are upholstered.
a tufted upholstered table.
Yeah, that might be just a little excessive.
that's very modern art. Like, I could see that in a museum.
Seriously, that would be weird. Cool. So we've got another question, actually from email, Tom from Pittsburgh. Thank you for emailing us, Tom. So he asks if we could spend a day in the shop with either Paul Sellers or Roy Underhill, who would it be? And also, who do we think would win in a build-off? So he says, great job on the podcast and all of your channels. So thank you, Tom. So who wants to start us off?
That's an easy question.
Two-parter. All right.
No, that's easy.
Yeah? Go for it.
Roy Underhill.
Yeah?
Roy Underhill.
Okay.
For me, not to put anything against Paul Sellers, but for me, the whole reason for the shop is the fun and the enjoyment of it. And Paul Sellers is an amazing craftsman, but he's very professional.
Yeah.
whereas Roy Underhill, if you've ever been around him for any amount of time, is just a he makes everything he touches so much fun, so much more fun, and it's just a blast to hang around.
Definitely, yeah, he's a ridiculous fun. What do you think about in the build off, like, though, James? What who do you think would win in a build off?
Oh, in a build off, Paul Sellers, because Roy Underhill would have cut a hand off if he's doing it for speed.
I don't know. Paul takes like 45 minutes of video to cut like one dovetail, so he's not exactly speedy.
See, I would have to say that I would rather build something with Paul Sellers, just because I feel like, I think I said that he would be like the coolest grandpa ever.
Yes, you did.
Like a few podcast episodes ago. I just feel like I would learn so much from him. But I would rather have a beer with Roy Underhill.
Yeah.
I think that's the correct answer.
Yeah, see, this is a tough one for me. I think I would want to hang out with Roy more. But I think I would, well, see, I don't know if I'd learn more from Paul necessarily, because Roy is just such a vast freaking, you know, just resource of knowledge. I mean, he's just amazing in what he knows about all this stuff. So, yeah, that's a tough call. I mean, we'd probably go to Roy. And realistically, I want to take one of Roy's classes, because his school is like an hour and a half from me. I mean, it's not far at all. So I totally am wanting to make it to one of his classes. So
it is unanimous that you guys would rather have a beer with Roy Underhill, though, right?
No question.
Roy Underhill is more the historical informational knowledge.
Yeah.
Whereas Paul Sellers is more of the practical, functional.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends on what you want to know.
The technical proficiency.
Yes.
Yeah. He is also a wealth of knowledge, though, so that's a tough call. And I guess if I hung out with Paul, it means I would get to go to Britain, so, you know, versus just going down the road to North Carolina. So that, you know, that's got to be a factor as well. So, you know, I wouldn't mind going to Britain. That would be fun. Cool. Well, I guess before we get into what we're watching, well, I don't know if you guys are going to have a lot to add to this. I was going to say we could talk about Dust Collection, but I don't know. That might be pointless because, Zach, you don't have Dust Collection, and James, you just use a broom. So,
I sold my Dust Collection.
My Dust Collection is my lungs right now.
All right. Maybe scratch that then. That's funny. Oh, well, I guess we got another question from the audience. Again, from Evan, he's asking our favorite measuring tool. So not necessarily the best, but he says his is a folding ruler. What do you guys think? I know mine. Mine is this tiny little tape measure I keep on my pocket at all times, and that's what I reach for 90% of the time, probably, unless I need some like super precision, just because I just pull it out. You know, I finally learned that trick where you don't have to unhook the tape measure, you just pull it out and like, bend it, you know, because I was always using one of those crazy like Stanley Fat Max tape measures, so they're impossible to bend. So now I got a little one, and I can just pull it out and, you know, just measure what I need and let go, and it zips right back to the side of my pocket. I feel kind of like Batman or something, and it is so sweet, because, you know, half the time I don't need to make precise measurements. You know, it's like, oh, how wide is this roughly, or how long is this roughly? You know what I mean? Like, especially when you're breaking down, you know, roughly breaking down materials and stuff. So that has been
to do when we get together. We need to all bring our own tape measure, and we can use whatever strategy we want. And the contest is to see who can extend the tape measure the furthest before it keels over.
Well, tape measure?
I'll use my I'll use my Stanley one, because, man, that thing's got like, I think I can go out like 12 feet with it or something ridiculous without it breaking. It's like incredibly wide.
That's crazy. Yeah. I have a Milwaukee that could probably give you a run for the money.
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy duty, but it does have like the magnetic catch on the end of it, so that might weigh it down. I don't know.
My folding roll is only 30 inches long.
Yeah.
You like where I take these questions?
Everything's got to be a competition.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so I guess we can go ahead and move into what we've been watching, and or reading or whatever. So who wants to kick us off? James, I see you got an interesting one there. That's something I've been wanting to check out.
Yes, Mortise and Tenon. They call themselves a magazine, but it's a half-inch thick book that comes out once a year. And it's basically a like you would have a university journal, but devoted to historical woodworking. And it is just, it comes out every year in January, and mine just came in the mail this last week, and it is breathtaking. It is like an entire book of woodworking porn. Just the most amazing pictures and information and historical data and great articles and amazing information. And it's just one of those things you can sit down and slowly soak it in and then go back and read it again, because it's just, it's fantastic.
The presentation of those things alone, it's like,
oh yeah.
Oh yes. It comes in wrapped waxed paper with a, with waxed string tying it, and then a melted wax seal on the string and paper. It's just, and it even comes with wood shavings in
the, and it's
in the
delivered
packaging
by a raven.
Yes. Yeah. It is phenomenal. And just, yeah, it's an entire day's worth of joy for me.
What's that thing? What do those go for?
Like 30 bucks, 24 bucks.
I don't remember.
I'm on the website now. Yeah. $24. It's not bad at all. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
I don't even care
what's
in it. I just want to like see that thing and have it in front of me and open it, because I'll feel really important for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I need to pick up a copy of both, I guess, volume 1 and 2. I saw his
and whatever
booth.
You,
oh, go ahead.
Whatever you do, make sure you order it from the Mortise and Tenon magazine website. Don't order it from a bookseller or something like that. Because if you order from a bookseller or Amazon, it doesn't come with all the wrappings.
Mm.
And it's just, it is so much better when it actually comes wrapped. Which is, it's phenomenal.
It's like Christmas.
I've got this huge smile on my face right now.
Yeah, you're geeking out, man. That's cool. Yeah, no, I saw his booth at WIA, and it was, you know, it was like a spectacle in and of itself. So he's, what's his name? Joshua or something like that? I'm trying to remember.
Joshua.
Yeah. Yeah, he's killing it. So are they associated with popular woodworking? Because I know I've gotten like a bunch of emails this week about the Mortise and Tenon magazine from popular woodworking.
I don't think so. I think it's just sold on their website.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I need to pick that up. Even though I'm not, you know, a super hand tool dude, just the photography alone is amazing.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
well, and the other thing that's really cool about it is that you get to go back and you think about this golden age of woodworking with everything hand cut and everything specifically made. And so the magazine then goes back and looks at all these pieces and takes them apart, literally takes them apart, because it's all hide glue so they can take them apart, and photographs all the joinery and says, well, look at this. He still left these milling marks on here. He let his saw marks go long. There's gaps in these dovetails. And it really points out all these things. It's like, wow, I feel really good about my joints right now, because this master of woodworking, you know, 200 years ago was turning out these pieces, and the joints don't look anything better than mine.
Yeah, that's really cool. I need to definitely dig into some of that stuff. It looks like they've got a really awesome, like 2 hour plus long video too. Have you bought that, James?
I have not gotten into that yet. No.
Yeah, I need to check that out, because I mean it's like $27, but that seems like pretty good value at like 136 minutes. So that would be. That would be pretty cool. Yeah, definitely go check out MortiseandTenonMag.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. They're doing some really cool stuff over there for sure. So I guess what I want to recommend this week is a channel called Great Big Story. I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I searched on our website, but I didn't see that I had mentioned it. So sorry if I've mentioned it, but it's an awesome channel. I've actually heard about them. David Picciuto recommended it on Making It like a while ago, and really, really awesome channel. Basically, they come out, I don't even know how many a week, but at least like 3 or 4 videos a week, and they're extremely high quality, like usually only 3 or 4 minutes long, but it's a really cool story encapsulated into a very short video. So this week they came out with a video on the guy who did the voice of Mario. in, you know, like Super Mario 64 and basically all of the modern, you know, games where Mario actually had a voice, he has done the voice for it. So it is... That was an awesome one. They did another one on this company that makes beer tap handles. They make, like, I think they said, like, some ridiculous number. Like, maybe even, like, 200,000-plus tap handles a year. And, you know, everybody from Budweiser to small little craft breweries. And just seeing, like, their production shop set up, it was really cool. They've done ones on a company still making globes by hand, which was incredible. It's got all kinds of stuff. It's not really, not at all like maker stuff, but just really, really interesting content and very, very well done. So definitely go check them out for sure. Zach, what you got?
So I've been watching a few Kyle Toth videos, and they're good. So
if you haven't, seen of the any year. Of them,
yeah. If you haven't seen any of them and you're into watching stuff that's good, I recommend it.
That's
also completely off topic because I have to have at least one. There's a subreddit called Starter Packs. I don't know why. I know they're dumb and everybody's like heard of them, but just the starter pack meme thing in general. But I think they're like the funniest thing in the world. They're ridiculous. So
if you feel like laughing, I've heard of that.
Starter Packs.
Starter.
You never packs. Heard of it?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Interesting.
So anyway, I'll leave it at that. I don't want to get too into it, but they're funny stuff.
That's funny. Cool. Well, I guess let's talk about our favorite tools of the week then. Zach, you want to continue on talking?
Sure. Oxyacetylene torch. I had a bonding moment this week with my oxyacetylene torch, and it was I'm doing more of those blacksmith roses, and I used to do them in my forge, but it's way faster to do them with the oxy torch, just because my forge is not very efficient. But yeah, I found it. The secret is I used to always heat up everything with the big rosebud torch, which puts out a lot of heat over a big area, but for doing the small stuff like curling the petals on the rose and stuff, I have just a small, I think, number two head on it, and it's very precise, and it's just really fun. It was really kind of had a zen moment doing it the other day. It was just really, really cool. And I actually messed around with a little bit more brazing the other day, had a lot more success keeping the heat down with that. So yeah, that was fun. That's my tool of the week.
Nice. Cool.
It's a fun tool.
Yeah, no, that was, I remember the first time getting to use that when I took my welding class, and I was like, man, this is a seriously powerful tool, especially with that rosebud tip, like cutting through steel. That was,
Well, the rosebud's not the cutting tip. That's the one that just has like a bunch of holes in it, and it just, puts out a lot. It spreads it out, but it puts out a lot of heat. It's good for like, if you're going to be bending stuff to heat it up. It's not a cutting torch, but
gotcha.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, and that's one of those tools that I have in my shop that I know I'm using it for 10% of what I could use it for. Like I could go down the whole rabbit hole of tips and tricks that I can be using the torch for. So
yeah, you should definitely check out This Old Tony did that guy I've recommended multiple times. He's the Machinist channel. He did a really great video on oxyacetylene and, you know, doing welding with oxyacetylene and all this very, very detailed and lots of really good info in that video. He's, you know, I always recommend his stuff. So he's an amazing, amazing YouTuber. So cool. James, what about you, man?
I have to go with a Veritas customizable hand plane. Veritas basically redesigned the hand plane. Most everyone else has taken the Bailey pattern and jumped off from it, and they have from the ground up made a brand new hand plane, and it is incredible. Just so many bells and whistles on it, and when I first started looking at them, I was expecting the price to be, you know, 2 to 3 times what they are, But this thing, I mean, it has the ability to, it has little set screws that come out on either side to capture the blade and hold it in place. So that, number one, the blade doesn't move laterally on you while you're cutting. But number two, when you take it out to sharpen it, you can put it back in. It goes back in the exact same place. So it's all set up. So your sharpening is just so much faster. Hmm. It has an adjustable mouth. So just like the low angle planes where you can move the mouth in and out, you know, on the traditional Bailey pattern, you have to move the frog back and forth in order to close the plane, close the mouth, which is an absolute pain. On these, you can actually close the mouth. And you can get it with a frog. You can buy different angles all the way from, I think, 35 all the way up to 65 degrees. You can customize the handle, the front knob. You can customize the iron that goes into it. And so on their website, you get to design and build this hand plane, and they ship it to you. And it is incredible. It is one of the most enjoyable planes I have ever used. Hmm. I just put out a video on it today, or when you're getting this last week. And it is, I can't say enough good things about it. It made my entire day.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. That sounds really cool. Like, that's like the super geeky new hand plane, you know? Like, that's pretty awesome. That would be fun, man. They just are always coming up with cool new ideas. Yeah. I feel like, I mean, whether it's, you know, different steel types, and they just Veritas is killing it, obviously. So for me, I've got a couple of new tools. They're not necessarily my favorite tool of the week, but just some new stuff I've gotten that I'm going to just talk quickly about. One is one of these Mirka sanders. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. They make these really low profile sanders. They're kind of similar in look to like the air powered like pneumatic sanders that, like, you know, auto body people would use, but really, really awesome. I just got it like probably a couple hours before this show started, and I am very excited to start using that more. It has a bunch of really cool features. One, like, almost as soon as you release the paddle, which is how you kind of turn it on and off, it stops spinning. So you don't have that, like, you know, 6 second wait for the freaking sander to stop. It's like, God, that's the most annoying thing. It's also really low profile, as I said, so it can kind of get in between pieces. Like, my main sander right now is a 6-inch Bosch, but it's probably like 6 inches tall, so I can't really get into very tight spaces with it. It's great for like big tabletops and stuff like that, but it's not very good for small tight spaces. So I'm really excited to have the Mirka for that. And then also, they have this really interesting sanding pad setup. So instead of the traditional, you know, basically just sandpaper with a couple holes punched in it, it's actually a kind of a mesh material with, you know, the kind of abrasives impregnated in the mesh. So the dust
collection, like a drywall sander?
Yeah, kind of like that. So it's not like a solid piece of paper with, you know, some sort of, you know, whatever, Velcro backing. It's actually a mesh. And so it's got, like, the actual sander has, like, probably 12 holes on it, so it pulls a lot of air through. And so supposedly the pads are supposed to last longer, and the dust collection is supposed to be a lot better. So I'm very excited to have that. Sanding is one of my least favorite things in the shop, so anything I can do to make that a little better, I'm pretty excited about. And then the other thing is, I just got a new spray system, which I'm super pumped about. The Fuji Q3 Platinum. It's a 3-stage turbine HVLP system. Yeah, so pretty excited to give that a shot. Give it a shot, literally. That should be pretty fun. I've really liked the Earlex quite a bit, and it works great. But it's got some things I don't like about it. The way it attaches, the hose actually attaches to the gun. It's not a positive connection, so it's just kind of a pressure fit, friction fit, and so if I pull on it the wrong way, the hose will pop out, and then that blasts air all over the place, which inevitably, since I'm in a wood shop, blasts dust all over the place. So if I'm in the middle of finishing, that is not what I want. So that was one of the really annoying factors. And then also, for some weird reason, they put the air intake on the bottom of the Earlex unit. So any like leaves or, you know, big wood chips or whatever that's on the ground will get sucked up into this kind of filter and reduce the air intake. So that kind of was bothersome. So I'm excited to try the Fuji. It seems to be, I mean, it's like three times the price, so it should be a much nicer unit. So we'll see. That should be pretty fun to mess around with. So cool. Well, you guys got anything else you want to add or plug or anything?
I'll plug my rose giveaway again the video that I put out. So if you guys, I don't think I had it up last week, but
when's it over?
I was planning on giving away one blacksmith rose, but I'm actually going to give away two. A little secret that you guys will know of that nobody else does. So just watch the video. I won't explain it here because we're almost out of time.
Cool. When does the giveaway end, just in case people are listening to this?
That one is going to end as I start the big giveaway. This is kind of a good way for me to test the platform out and make sure that everything's set up right. Right now, I don't want to say in stone, but I think the 25th is when I'm going to announce the winners of the rose, and that's also going to be the same video that I start the big giveaway. I have probably $2,000 worth of stuff that I'm going to be giving away. So
okay, cool. Well, so by the time they hear this, I guess the giveaway will be over, but then get prepared for the big giveaway then.
Yeah, the big one. Cool. But if you want a rose, I have them on my website. You can buy them there, zhfabrications.com.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening, as always. Again, if you want to support the show a little more, check us out on Patreon. We've got lots of great support levels there. And if you want to learn more about the show, we've got show notes, as always, on the website, craftedpodcast.com. And until next week, happy building. Thanks, guys.